You are listening to the Next Best Picture podcast, and this is Will Mavity's interview with the Oscar-nominated sound team of The Shape of Water, sound re-recording mixer Glenn Goche and sound mixer Chris Cook.
If I told you about her, what would I say? I wonder.
Hi there, and welcome to yet another episode of the Next Best Picture podcast. I'm your host, Will Mavity, and today I have with us two very special guests. We have the sound re-recording mixer and the sound mixer of The Shape of Water, both part of its Oscar-nominated sound team, Glenn Goche and Chris Cook. Guys, how are you?
Woohoo!
We're good.
We're good, yeah. Happy to be on the air.
We're happy to have you. So it's an exciting time. It is both of you guys' first Oscar season, correct? Participating in nominated film?
That's right.
It is.
Well, that is fantastic. It's beautiful sound work, and there's a lot to talk about. How did you both end up working with Guillermo del Toro on this in the first place?
Glenn here. I've done four pictures with Guillermo, starting with Mimic way back when. And so whenever he shoots in Toronto, he hires me. So it's a good relationship we have.
And Chris?
And similar with me. I've worked with him once before on a television, a pilot called The Strain.
Oh, you were part of The Strain team. I heard that, I heard basically part of the reason the film was able to go so low budget was that he basically got a lot of you guys from The Strain just to kind of come back on board in between seasons. Is that correct?
I only did the pilot. So I only worked on the very first episode, like it was like a 2-hour pilot. I didn't work on the remainder of the series. So, but I believe the sound editors, the sound crew, sound editors, they did work on both the pilot. They didn't do the pilot, but they did the series. And they also worked on the film, on Shape of Water.
I know with that budget, Paul Ostaberry was able to adapt a bunch of the Strain sets and reinvigorate them for Shape of Water. And you know, we managed to stay in the same stage, so that was pretty unique.
So I guess, you know, I was going to address this later on, but how did you guys make such a big budget sounding film on a $19.5 million budget? Because I'm floored.
Well, that's I'm not sure how to answer that. I guess we're not bad at what we do, maybe, or I don't know. You know, I'm not sure. I think just
sorry.
Just we do what we do, and whatever comes our way. I guess I you know, it's we put our best foot forward and bring your A game, you know.
Well, it turned out splendidly. Okay, so this is a film, obviously, that's working with the elements extensively. You're working with water, which I imagine is incredibly hard to recreate the way sound travels through water or when water is heavily present in the background. Tell me a little bit about what it was like mixing sound for scenes that either took place entirely underwater or had water pouring or spilling in the background. I imagine that was incredibly hard.
Yeah, well, like in a lot of the scenes had water in them, and the underwater sounds were, a lot of it was provided, but then it had to be mixed, you know, with reverb and EQ and so forth, you know, and in the space, and put it in the room to make you feel like that feeling that you're underwater.
It's the opposite for me. I'm trying to record dialogue around, you know, the running water and the labs and the steam and stuff. And I'm trying to keep it at its lowest level in order to hear the dialogues clearly. So it's funny when you get into post, then you want to enhance that. But on the stage and recording, you want to reduce it.
Diminish. That's right. Glenn wants to get the best recordings, which he does, of the dialogue. And then we take that and then, you know, envelop the dialogue with the sound.
So Glenn, you were a production sound mixer, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So in sequences like the bathroom sequence, where, as I understand it, the crew sunk the entire set underwater. How did you go about getting recordings for that?
Those were all pretty much recreated in the post by the sound designers.
Right.
After the fact. Right. For the underwater stuff.
Yeah, hopefully. What was the most difficult on-set recording you had to do?
Well, trying to record dialogue with full rain going outside in the set, as you recall from the movie, there's always a rain element somewhere, and so there was always rain outside the windows. There was always water running in the lab, steam in the lab, you know, pumps and whatnot. So really it was just finding that balance where it sounded natural that the rain outside the windows pounding on whatever, trying to dampening the rain falling so it didn't obliterate the dialogue and it sounded more natural. We'd lay hog's hair down and whatnot to soften where the rain would hit, because we're on a studio floor, obviously. And then just hearing the dialogue clear enough over this surround of rain that constantly was going on.
Now, guys, tell me a little bit about working with Alexander Desplat on this. And maybe this is more of a Chris question because he was more working in post. But I noticed there's a lot of diegetic sounds incorporated into the score. You know, like Sally Hawkins' whistling, I know, weaves in to Desplat's score. And I guess a Glenn question, was that planned from the start? Was there an idea for how the score would be overlaid with the film? Was it planned to coincide with Sally's whistling? Tell me a little bit about this Desplat process.
For me, not so much involvement. Her dance and imaginary sequence where she's ballroom dancing was one thing, but really it was Chris, and when Desplat delivered the music, I think it was his balance there that put that all together.
Yeah, with the whistling section, I mean, that Sally is whistling in that as well. So it was a combination of a recorded whistle that Alexandra had supplied and Sally's, a combination in certain spots. We weaved in and out of the two elements on the stage, and just to create more of a reality moment and then just more of a non-reality moment when we're on the bus and she's drawing with the water, you know, section there.
I have to say, when I saw the movie finished, Alexander's score was absolutely stunning. It just brought everything together.
It sure did. It was incredible.
Oh my God. It's maybe my favorite score he's done so far, and that's saying something. And the way that he mirrors almost the way that water might undulate with the music is just gorgeous. Another member of the sound team, who you guys have referenced some already, are the sound editors. Tell me a little bit about your collaboration with them and creating the convincing sounds of a creature from the Amazon who's not meant to be terrifying, but almost sympathetic.
Right. Well, that was Nathan. Nathan Robitaille was the supervising sound effects editor. And he basically created the voice of the creature himself as a test for Guillermo to approve or to see, because they were going to hire voice actors. But before they did that, Nathan took it upon himself to say, I'll just give it the college try. And he did, and he did a wonderful job. And Guillermo loved it. And also Guillermo added his own voice to the creature as well. So it's a blend of Guillermo's voice, Nathan's voice, certain animal creatures at certain times, different animals at different times, a blend of like 64 different elements go into the creature's voice to make up his voice.
Oh my God.
Basically. And then Nelson Frere was the dialogue, supervising dialogue editor, who did a phenomenal job also with the dialogue and all the ADR, and it was just fantastic.
It sounds like you guys had a very talented crew, but it also sounds like Del Toro was very involved in the post process. I know there are some directors who kind of let the sound guys do their own thing, like Mel Gibson, and there's others like Michael Bay who want their fingers in everything. It sounds like Del Toro was very much the latter. Tell me a little bit more about how Guillermo was involved in the process of creating this soundscape in post, aside from literally giving his voice to the creature?
Right. Well, when we were doing the final mix, he wasn't actually there during the final mix for a lot of it. We would go ahead and mix five reels. I think it was four reels. And then he came back and we played them down, and he approved or changed or his creative choices and changed things. And so that's how that went, because he's such a busy person. He has a lot of things on the go, so he couldn't be on the stage like 24/7, or, well, it wasn't 24/7, but he couldn't be on the stage when we were mixing all the time. So he had other commitments to take care of. And so that's how we proceeded with Sydney Walensky, the picture editor, was basically, he was helping us with the mix, what we should, you know, which elements we should push in certain things. And either that would be great when Guillermo came back, or he would change it. And that's how that was, the procedure went for that. So we did four reels first. We played those all down, did changes for a couple of days. And then we did the remaining three reels, and I believe he came back and we did changes for those reels for another couple of days, and then played the whole film down and did a few more changes for a couple more days, and we were done. If that makes any sense at all.
No, it does.
Sounds easy, doesn't it?
I'm sure this whole film was just a cinch for you guys. No.
Yeah, it was just a cinch. No. It was amazing. It's an amazing project, and it's just amazing to be involved, you know, with these group of people, and it's just such an honor to be nominated and all that.
What about the ticking clocks throughout this film? I know time is a presence, obviously, in the narrative itself. There were a few, you know, I would love to ask someone involved in the film, both a few objects I was curious about symbolically. There's clocks that show up both in the film itself and the sound mix, and there's a burning chocolate factory. What can you guys tell me about both of those?
You mean metaphorically?
I mean both. First off, tell me a little bit about how you guys wove time into the soundscape. And then secondly, if anyone talked about what the chocolate factory meant, I'm just curious.
Yeah, no one's really mentioned the chocolate factory. In fact, it was on fire and it smelled nice. It's hard to put smell in the sound, but I'm not sure. Guillermo would be the person to ask about that one. But with the clocks, yes, there were clocks, and we did have, like, right in the beginning, there's the clock, the time, floating down. And the alarm clock that Sally has in her room, and it's always going. And then there's also, like, it's a lot of metronome sounds in the sound effects. Like in the lab, there's a pulsating to maybe mimic a clock also. And I don't know how else to describe the clocks, but there is a section where Michael Shannon is making love with his wife, and it cuts, and we use the same rhythmic bed sounds, and they go over the cut that are the same rhythm as the pulsing sounds of the lab.
Oh, that's
kind of really cool. And we used his voice and the sound of the bed, and just carried that same rhythmic pulsing into the lab, just to, you know, keep the connect the two. You know,
so what are some more Easter eggs like that average moviegoers wouldn't have noticed?
I can't say those things.
Oh. I'm sure there's plenty, though. Yeah, knowing
you have to go watch. You have to go watch the movie. And there's several.
Oh, are there? I'm sure there are. Oh, this is going to drive me crazy. What is something that during this season no one has asked either of you, both about the craft of sound mixing, sound recording, and specifically about this film?
Huh. I don't know. Glenn?
That hasn't been asked. I don't know. It was a hard movie. It was a hard movie, and it took the talent of a lot of people, and we were really late late nights, late hours, and it was really people pulling together to pull this movie off. They didn't have a lot of money. Like I said, we had to endorberate a stage that existed and make things work for us. So, and it worked beautifully. I mean, the look of the picture says 1962, and there's no question about it. And
yeah,
it was just everybody bringing their A game, which you have to do with Guillermo anyway. And he demands the best from himself and everybody around him. And that's just the level you work at on any of his movies that I've worked on. So, you know that going in, but it was not an easy film, but the results are, and the accolades are quite rewarding.
Yeah.
Glenn, are there any stories from on set you're allowed to tell us that were particularly entertaining?
No.
Like, no. What happens in the shape set stays in the shape set.
I am a man of discretion.
Well, what's next for both of you guys? You know, you've both been Oscar nominated. So what's next project wise?
I'm currently working on a Chris Columbus Christmas movie. Kurt Russell playing Santa. I think it's going to be released and on Netflix as well. And that's fun. It's been pretty good. And who knows after that? We're off to the Baptist this weekend. Next weekend,
that's
we're
right.
off to England. So that'll be a nice trip.
I'm looking forward to that. It should be a lot of fun.
And what about you?
Myself, I'm starting something called On the Basis of Sex. It's the
Ruth Bader Ginsburg film.
It's a biopic. That's right, the Ruth Bader Ginsburg film, yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, that could potentially be another Oscar player, and you could see yourself back here very soon.
Stop.
I know, I don't want to inflate your ego.
One at a time.
Well, guys, thank you so much. You know, you guys have already given me a pretty good explanation of the film. Is there anything else you would like both our listeners and any voters who might be tuning in to know about your magnificent work on this picture?
Well, vote for Shape of Water, first of all.
vote for the Shape, yeah.
And
it's
go
a fantastic
see the movie.
Film that, and see yeah. the movie. It's a fantastic film.
Guys, thank you so much. Glenn and Chris, you've been wonderful, and I can't wait to see if you guys are on the stage on Oscar night and to see what else you guys produce down the line sound-wise. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Will.
Once again, this is the Next Best Picture Podcast. I'm your host, Will Mavity. You can find me on Twitter at Mavericks Movies, and you can find the podcast on TuneIn, SoundCloud, iTunes. Please subscribe, and we will see you all next time.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Burn the Boats from Evergreen Podcasts. I interview political leaders and influencers, folks like award-winning journalist Soledad O'Brien and conservative columnist Bill Kristol, about the choices they confront when failure is not an option. I won't agree with everyone I talk to, but I respect anyone who believes in something enough to risk everything for it. Because history belongs to those willing to burn the boats. Episodes are out every other week wherever you get your podcasts.